Good morning. First and most importantly in saying this, I'd like to, and I don't think I've ever heard anyone word it quite like this before, I'd like to wish a happy Father's Day, not to you men first, but first to God. A happy Father's Day to God, who is the Father of us all. And second, a happy Father's Day to all of the physical fathers out there. It's my second time as a celebrating Father's Day, and now that Emery is old enough to have at least a partial acknowledgement of something, it's even more interesting and fun than it was last year, since she's able to at least participate to some degree. You know, I'm involved in several different groups. I'm involved in the physical ministers. We call it the Metro Ministers Meeting, Metro Area Ministers Meeting. That meets once a month, except for the summer months, in Independence, Missouri. Who's the minister there is the one coming over here at the end of the month. And I'm involved in several on Facebook as well, ministers groups, that we share sermon ideas back and forth, notes or struggles we're going through, asking for advice or just various things. And then I even have some personal minister friends that we get together on Facebook through groups or through phone calls. And there's one that I grew up, he was actually a counselor of mine whenever I was at camp for several years before I became a counselor alongside with him my first year before he moved off. And him and I were talking over the past couple of weeks. We talk a lot in regards to fatherhood because he has two young daughters. And so him and I were speaking the other day about fatherhood, and I was telling him about the things that I'm starting to experience. And he asked me a question that really got me a week or so ago. We were chatting through Facebook, and he had his first child was a son named Noah who had a heart defect. And they knew at the time, whenever she was pregnant, his wife, that he had this heart defect. And they chose, of course, to carry the baby through term. And the baby died. Noah, he died just a couple hours after birth due to this heart defect. And then he and his wife would go on to have two daughters who are, I believe, 8 and 6, but don't quote me on that. And so him and I were talking about being fathers to daughters and about, you know, how I'm going to be the father of a son soon. And he asked me, in response to talking about his son Noah, he said, if your daughter, if Emery was to die today, if you woke up this morning and she was gone, she had died in her sleep, what is the number one thing that you wish you could go back and experience just one more time? If you could, if God granted you the access to have just one more moment with her, what would it be? And I told him one of my favorite moments during the day is when Emery's in a really good mood and I'm sitting on the floor playing with her and she backs up. She backs up a good long distance and she'll run full force at me and she'll knock me down. She'll climb on top of me, lay on my chest and give me a hug. And then I guess she gets it from her mom. I don't know. She'll go, aww. And I said, that is the moment that I would want. It's just one more laying on the floor, awe hug from her. And so he said that he thinks about that a lot due to the death of his son a few hours after being born. And he said with his two daughters, he thinks every day when he wakes up and he checks on them, he said, I wonder if this was my last day with them, what would I do? And it hit me really hard when he said, whether they were just born or whether they're 8 years old or 6 years old today, he said, the one thing I would want to do, he said, I would want them to sit in my lap and I'd want to tell them about a man who was God named Jesus and let them know that if this was the day that they were to go meet him, I'd want them to meet him as a friend, not as a stranger. In a survey done by Focused Press a year or so ago, they found that 61% of church dropouts once children become adults at the age of 18, that 61% attended Bible class 3 out of 4 Sundays growing up. Only 13% said they rarely or never attended Bible class. Among that same group, 74% said the Bible was opened in the home 1 to 2 times or fewer per week. And nearly half, 48%, said their families opened the Bible at home 1 to 2 times or less per month. And this was a group in which 61% attended church at least on a regular basis 3 out of 4 Sundays a week. A month. In other words, the majority of church dropouts were Bible class regulars, is what Brad Harib says in his notes. He says, despite their regular attendance, their families did not have any kind of regular devotional habits in the home. And these are children who came to church on a regular basis. Biblically speaking, spiritually speaking, this should not be the case in any Christian home, should it? The men of Israel had the duty of teaching their children and their families the law, and it was put primarily on them. In Ephesians 5, 25 through 26, we are told, husbands, to love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of the water with the word. We are told in Ephesians 5:25-26 that we are to that husbands are to emulate Christ and to sanctify our wives. And if we do that, how much more will we be able to teach and love our children? Make sure. Yeah. In Ephesians 6 and verse 4, just a few verses later, he tells us in Ephesians 6, 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. We are commanded by God to nurture and to love our children, not just physically, but spiritually. Brad Harib, in his note, goes on to say, by now you've probably all heard the statistics saying that anywhere from 60 to 80% of young people will leave the church after graduating high school. And he goes on to give the example that it doesn't really surprise us, or shouldn't really surprise us, if we look at just the regular attendance in congregations. How many do we have here that are age 30 or younger, compared to those that are 60 or above? How many children under the age of 18 do we have compared to those who are on the other side that are 70 years or older? It's not hard to realize that children under the age of 18 and young adults under the age of 30, that we are drastically outnumbered when it comes to church attendance or involvement compared to those that are older. So it's not uncommon for teachers and preachers to think in terms of hoping young people will remain faithful after they become an adult. But are we doing more than that? When it comes to my daughter, Emery, and my son, Enoch, when he gets here, am I only hoping that they will remain faithful? Or am I actually actively, proactively doing something to make sure that they remain faithful afterward? Just a few minutes ago, I was talking, I'll admit my fault, I was talking and whispering to TJ in the middle of the song a few minutes ago. And I whispered to him and I said, how amazing is it that if you take the family that's up here and put them back there, that your entire family is here and takes up an entire row and a half to fit the whole family. Look at the Bennicks here that take up an entire row minus one. You need to work on that. You need to fill up that extra row there, that extra seat there. Complete the row. And then you have all these families. I look and I see all of these families. The Chowning and extended Chowning family over there that takes up multiple rows on a regular basis here. And I look and I ask myself, are we doing more than just hoping that they will remain faithful? As Christian parents, we should be looking to develop warriors for the raging battle between sin and righteousness, as we learned at VBS. Developing warriors that are wearing the armor. In Psalm 127, in verse 4, it says, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. He describes the children in a relationship to their parents as arrows in the hands of a mighty warrior. So much time and so much energy is put into making sure that our children are successful. We make sure that they have a well-rounded academic experience and knowledge, that they try every different type of sport and whatever other extracurricular activities that they may want to pursue, baseball, basketball, gymnastics, all these different sports and extracurricular activities. We make sure that they receive the best academic education that we can offer them in the area we live. And we thrive and we encourage them. You've got to go to college to get a higher education, to be successful in life and make lots of money and take care of your family. But their long-term faithfulness is looked at something as a hope rather than something that we know and strive for. What if we flip the table? What if we put their spiritual development and knowledge first, above academics, above sports, above all these extracurricular activities? What if every Christian parent told the coach, my child will not be participating in any practice, scrimmage, or activity on a Wednesday night or Sunday? What if every parent told their coach, I'm sorry, but my child has this and that going on at this time. At this time, we are home and we are studying our Bible. I'm sorry, but that is not a compromise I'm willing to make. What if we showed by example just how much God, our Father, means to us in the home? I suspect that the church would have a whole new generation of spiritual warriors to lead the way into the next battle. Because one day my battle will be done. One day, I pray I'll be able to figuratively say, as what Paul wrote literally, that I have fought the good fight and that I have won the race. And I will be able to pass the torch on to my children and their children to carry on the fight for me. But how do we produce such spiritual warriors that we've talked about? Well, it's a process that takes years of parental focus and help from not just the parents, but the church as well. We would do well to start with a few basic things and build on from there. First and foremost, we must be willing and able to raise our expectations. It should not be out of the question to expect teenage Christians to start stepping up and taking an active role in their studies and in the church. And one of my favorite shows of all time, one that I hope to show Emery one day and Enoch, is Boy Meets World. And when we just got done, my wife and I, watching one of my favorite episodes, in which Mr. Feeney is being mocked, the teacher. He's being mocked by the students for wanting to teach and actually give them an education. He's being mocked by them. And he's talking about Gutenberg and Gutenberg's printing press. And he tells them, he said, in Gutenberg's generation, they longed and they hoped and thrived for a new book every 6 months. He says, your generation gets a new web page every 6 seconds. And what do with this technology? Beat King Koopa and save the princess. And he looks at them in the eyes and says, shame on you. And in one of the most impressive moments in all of this actor's acting career, the bell rings, and as the students stand up, he stops and says, no, sit down. He said, for the first time in 30 years of teaching, I choose to walk out on you. We have been given everything that pertains to life and godliness right here, according to Peter in his letter. And what are we doing with this knowledge? Should we and are we ashamed of ourselves if we're not using it to teach our children and our wives and ourselves and to create a spiritual home? Like I said, it should not be out of the question to raise our expectations and to expect teenage Christians to start stepping up and taking an active role and not just in the youth group with activities. As they progress as Christians, it shouldn't be abnormal to see young Christian men wanting to serve on the table, to lead prayer, to lead Bible readings of various kinds, to see the young ladies want to start sitting in and shadowing the older women that are teaching. It shouldn't be abnormal to see a teenage girl want to sit in on the ladies' class, not necessarily because she has the knowledge that some of the older ladies have, but to sit in and to learn what it means to be a lady in the congregation and in the home. We have a young lady here that in a couple years is going to be out in the world. Have we, as a congregation and as a family, have we prepared her for that? Or have we failed her? Same with the young man here that in 3 years or so, he's going to be out in the world. Have we prepared him for what it means to be active in the Lord's church? Or have we failed him? We need to pay attention to how we treat those among our youth who show an interest in spiritual matters. I remember when I started showing interest, whenever I started rather reading the Bible than doing other things, I was immediately pushed into ministry. And it wasn't a bad thing. I enjoy it. But I remember everyone saying, oh, he's going to be a minister one day. Oh, he just led a devotional. Oh, man, he's going to be a great minister one day. Oh, man, we need to get him into preaching school one day because he's going to be a great minister one day, as if it was abnormal for me to show interest. Instead, should we not be pushing and striving and encouraging every young child to show the same level of activeness in the Lord's church and in the home? Instead, we should be teaching all youth to be spiritual. We need Christian warriors, not just as preachers and teachers and missionaries and elders, but as regular teachers in the world and as janitors and as doctors and as salesmen and in every single reputable profession that is out there. Every young man should be raised up to live the qualifications that are given to an elder in 1 Timothy 3, 2 through 3, in which he says, an overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. We often look at this list and we look at the one in Titus that says the husband of one wife and above reproach and goes on the list there. And we often say this is what an elder should be. But what if we stripped that? What if instead of saying it's just for elders, what if we looked at every young man and even a young woman and say this is what you need to be as a Christian? Whether you're a deacon or not, whether you're an elder or not, whether you're a preacher or not, whether you're a Sunday school teacher or not, this is what I want you to be when you grow up. This is what I want my children to be. Or more specifically for the ladies, what about Proverbs 31? Should that not be what we strive for our young ladies to be like? That's the kind of woman I want my daughter to grow up to be like, just like my wife. That's the kind of, I want my son to grow up to be like this. And these young men and women here that are not married, that one day will be, what are you looking for in a spouse? Does it matter? No, we're not all going to be elders. We're not all going to be preachers or teachers or deacons. But the more people we have striving to live out these principles, the stronger the church as a whole is going to be. And I'm not just talking about Sunday morning worship. Paul knew that Timothy's youth could be used as an excuse if he was allowed to, which is why Paul called him to overcome that problem by setting an example in his speech and in his conduct and in his love and in his faith and in his purity. And we shouldn't expect anything less from our children today. It should not be something out of the norm for our children to want to be spiritual. We can't make the mistake of bringing up teenage Christians in the church and saying, well, the youth minister is to teach, or the minister is to teach, or the elders are to teach, or their Sunday school teachers are to teach. Now, while I have a responsibility as a minister, and so do the three elders we have here, and so do the Sunday school teachers, and so does every single person in here who is part of the congregational family we have here, but first and foremost, so are the parents. I cannot make up for what you should be doing at home with your families. As a father on Father's Day, or as a mother, or as a husband to his wife, or as a wife to her husband. Because the example you set as a married couple, as a husband and wife now, whether you have children or not, is the direct example that your children are going to follow one day. I gave the example in class this morning about staying the night at a friend's house once whenever I was a child. And they went to the same congregation I went to, and I was really good friends with this boy and still am. And I remember waking up on Sunday morning, we were getting ready for church, and his children and his wife were, you know, for some reason or another, it was their fault he was running late, he claims. And I remember him screaming and yelling and cussing at them. We got to get up. We got to go. Hurry, hurry. Get out the door. And he was waiting in the car for them whenever they were finally ready. And he sped to church to make sure he got to church on time. And they parked in the parking lot. And he was still all the way there mumbling and grumbling and screaming and yelling at his family for making him late and what appearance that was going to cause them. And the second they stopped, turned off the car, and he opened up that door, and he met one of the members of the church. It was all smiles. And he was hugging his wife and had his arm wrapped around her and just talking about how wonderful she was and what great week his children had. And everything was great. And he hugged on the people and shook hands with them. And I saw this drastic change in this man. And sad to say that now his son, who was my really good friend, is doing the same thing that I've seen with his children. Posting things on Facebook about my wife did this today or my child did this today because of the example he had at home. We must raise our expectations. We need to set the bar higher so that when they leave, they will be fully fledged, functioning Christians as adults. Second, we need to disciple them, a term that has gone by the wayside in recent years. The Christian life can and very often is very difficult. The Bible, especially to children, is a huge book, especially depending on what version you get and how big of a font it is. It can be bigger or slimmer depending on that. But as a whole, with 66 books, it's a lot and it's intimidating to children and can be hard to understand even for adults. A strong prayer life can take a lifetime and a long time to develop. Raising our expectations is important, yes, but we cannot expect anyone, adult or child, to do something that they've never done before because it isn't right or fair. What they need is to be discipled. First, by their parents. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7 tells us, "You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up." He tells us that we have been given as parents a responsibility from God. But so have you. As teachers, as elders, as hopefully deacons one day. And as members of the congregation, we have all been given an obligation and a command as spiritual mentors to these children as they grow. But we cannot pass it on to these people. I cannot pass on my spiritual fatherly duties to someone else, or else I will have to answer for that. What does it mean to disciple them? It means to show them how to be Christians in daily life. Classes and church camps and activities and rallies and devotionals and other attempts are great spiritual boosters, but don't teach children how to live as a Christian day in and day out. They aren't focused on the day-to-day life of a Christian. What are they to do when temptation arises? How do you answer an atheist friend who's beginning to question why you believe? How do you talk to your friend who goes to another church or not one at all and begins to ask you questions on why you are different? What do you do when you're getting ready to meet someone and maybe to date them or to court them and marry them one day? What are you to look for? How am I to raise my children up in the best way that I can to lead them by example? These are the kind of things that classes and devotionals and camps and rallies don't talk about. They can't talk about because there's not enough time. We can't just suddenly assume that someone knows just because they're an adult. But what we can know is that if I don't teach my children, somebody else will. The school will. The television will. The atheistic friend will. The future non-Christian wife will. If I don't fulfill my responsibility as a parent and as a spouse, somebody else is going to. That's exactly why Matthew 28, 19 through 20 includes making disciples and teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, along with the command to immerse. The journey doesn't end when I come up out of the water. It just begins, and we are to continue to disciple and continue to teach. We need to show our children how to do in-depth Bible study, and not just to pick up the bits and pieces from Bible classes and sermons, because that's not enough to develop a thriving relationship with God or an understanding of His Word or how to apply it. We need to pray with them. We need to pray for them. And we need to teach them how to pray. The best way to learn how to pray is to hear the prayers of those who have spent a lifetime perfecting what it means to pray to God. Am I able to teach that to my children? We need to show them how to study with others, how to teach, how to preach, how to pray, and how to serve, and to find whatever way they can to use their talents to God's glory, even if that means at the expense of some other extracurricular physical activity. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, "Train a child up in the way that he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." As we come to a close today, the last thing that I want us to learn as a basic for our spouses, for ourselves, and as parents, is to help them make an informed decision. Many will be quick to point out in Proverbs 22 and verse 6 that not all the Proverbs are meant to be taken exactly literal, and some are figurative, and I believe that that is true. That every child, as they become an adult, has to make their own decision. Whether or not they want to keep on and maintain their Christian life, that's up to them. I cannot force my children as they become adults to maintain the Christian life. But have I, in my negligence to do what I'm commanded to do, and as my spiritual, parental authority and my responsibility and obligation to do, have I neglected that, and have I crippled them in their ability to make that decision? Or, by not teaching them at all, have I made that decision for them? There's no comparison between a life for self and a life for Christ. A young person who is trained to see the paths clearly from their earliest days should have no trouble seeing that they have everything to gain by serving God and everything to lose by serving Satan. As they grow older in the world, attempts to seduce them and overwhelm them with seemingly endless streams of temptations and allurements and distractions and try to pull them away from God, there must be a grounded faith to show them which way they ought to go. As we start to do this, not only will we keep more young people in the church, but we'll have stronger congregations. We'll have stronger home lives. And maybe, prayerfully, we'll have stronger marriages and stronger Christian children. Maybe the divorce rate will start to decline instead of rise up. Maybe the amount of children that are falling away, the church dropouts, maybe that will fall away from 62% prayerfully. Winning the next generation is the key to winning countless souls for God. We have some boys coming up in July. 5 boys, unless the parents get another one, that are in a home that have been told by the world that nobody wants you. No one desires to have you. And they believe when they come in that there is no God who desires them either. We have an opportunity in July for a week, 5 days, less than a week, to show these 5 boys that there are people who desire to teach them. There are people that will love them. And there is a God who loves them and that will cherish their soul for all eternity. I say that because I don't want us to think inside the box of these 4 walls. I don't want us to just think about these children that are here, but all the children that are out there in the world, especially those who have been told by physical families that they're not desired. I don't want any child to become a church dropout because of a lack of people to show them what it means to be a loving and caring Christian. Because we all have a responsibility to these children. Whether it's the children here, the children at the boys' home that's going to be coming up, or any child that we come across. We have an opportunity, and if we squander that opportunity, we will be held accountable for that on the day of judgment. So are we, as it says on the board, creating a spiritual home? Or have we failed our children and thus failed God? Whatever your need may be, I pray, I implore you to please come today and do what we can to reverse this, to be a spiritual home today as we stand and sing.